you for joining us today on Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. As is usually the case, I brought up a listener email last show, Dave.
Yes, you did. And we both blew it.
Yep. Went right over the top of it, never covered it. So first and foremost, sincere thank you to those of you who take the time to either message us on Instagram or Facebook or send us an email through the website. It's not that we don't appreciate it. It's that both Dave and I suffer from, I'll call it squirrel syndrome.
Yeah.
We get rolling on something and then whatever we said 5 minutes ago is gone.
Oh yeah, because those are fast squirrels.
So without further ado, John, I'm not going to read your last name. John sent us an email. First and foremost, thanks for the compliment, John. He brought up when we were discussing muzzle loaders.
He complimented us?
He did. He said, enjoy listening to your show very much. I like the information you provide on the outdoors in Nevada.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you, John.
Appreciate that.
Appreciate that.
So he did point out some of the stuff we were talking about when it comes to muzzle loaders could be construed as kind of confusing. And I want to make the catch-all statement right now. Uh-huh. Neither you or I are muzzleloader experts or even what I'd call accomplished muzzleloader hunters.
Yeah, I'd even have a hard time saying that we're even muzzleloader
people.
Like in the middle of the pack. We're trailers. We're trailers.
So we kind of took the plunge. We did not draw muzzleloader tags. And I hate to say this because it hurts me in my heart. Shout out to Dustin Great's son, Talon, who actually killed his buck this year with my muzzleloader.
Yeah.
I'm a little sad it wasn't me to get it done with my muzzleloader, but...
Well, but now you know what can...
100% capable.
Capable of putting an animal on the ground.
Yeah. So Talon killed a heck of a nice buck with my muzzleloader with the load we worked up.
Oh, nice.
So...
Perfect.
It works. I just have not had the opportunity. Back to John's email. He sounds like in this email, he's very familiar with black powder muzzle loaders and sort of the more primitive side of it.
Oh, okay.
He pointed out we might have misspoke, but he was asking about inline bolt action muzzle loaders, or he refers to them as inline bolt action muzzle loaders. I believe we've been calling ours inline muzzle loaders.
Correct.
And I think that is correct. They are not bolt action, however.
No, they are not bolt action, but they are in line because it's even in the owner's manual.
Right. So, John.
That's how I know. It says it right in the owner's manual. So I was like, okay, it's in line.
We're not talking about bolt action muzzle loaders. We got, I'll call it like a break action.
Yeah,
break action. The CVA Optima V2 is what we got. You have to basically like an old double barrel shotgun. You break it open.
Put your primer in there.
Yep. Put the primer in there. You said it says inline in the manual.
Yeah.
Okay. So it is an inline system. However, it is not a bolt action. And that differs. What he was kind of referencing with the primitive stuff is those are not inline because there is a percussion cap.
Yes.
Or a flint lock.
On the side.
On the side. So when you cock that hammer back on a primitive one, squeeze the trigger, there's a spark off to the side of a flash pan with powder in it. That's what ignites your actual powder charge in the barrel.
Correct.
Okay, so ours are in line because when we pull the hammer back, cock it, and pull the trigger, that hammer is directly in line with the barrel. When it falls, it hits a primer that then ignites the main charge.
Correct.
There's no flash pan off to the side, none of that.
Nothing like that, yeah.
John, I hope we didn't lead you astray. We might have misspoke for sure. I don't know anything about the bolt action inline muzzle loaders.
No, me neither. I didn't.
I don't think we talked about that, but we might have.
Because I don't know if I've ever seen a bolt action muzzle loader.
I have seen them. There's one on the wall at Shields. I've seen them. I've never used them. And I think.
And I'm not sure how they work. I mean, I wouldn't know.
I think they are. And John, if you're listening, hey, send another email. Correct me on this. I've seen a video before where they were using one of those. And it was one of those, you know, they're hitting like pie plates at 600 yard muzzleloader videos.
Oh, geez.
But they were using pellets, and it did not appear as though you could use loose powder in one of those bolt action muzzleloaders.
So those all had to be a pellets.
It was like loading pellets where you would normally load a cartridge.
Oh.
And then closing and then, it.
So you're pushing with the you're pushing the pellets and the bullet all into the barrel.
I believe so.
So it's not. So then would that be technically considered a muzzleloader? Because muzzleloader, I mean, you load from the top of the muzzle down, and that
right.
was a muzzleloader. But if you're loading
I
from
think
the
maybe
bolt,
just the charge. I think the Sabot
goes
down the barrel, but then
but
you can load the powder, the pellets
Boy,
from the rear.
We're growing a lot of weeds here, man. We're getting thick.
I
We're going to have to research that. Now you've got my interest on the bolt action muzzleloader, how it works. I'm going to have to Google it.
I've just been thrown into deep waters. I don't like
buddy.
It. I know
no,
how
John,
ours
thank
work.
You, man. Thank yeah. you so much, because now you got us interested in...
We got to go down that rabbit
we're
hole.
We're going to have to.
Figure out what's what. But he said it would be nice if you were to offer more clarity between the two. I don't know that we accomplished that goal.
Oh, we so didn't accomplish that.
I
Not
think
in
we,
this conversation.
No.
We're just
no.
pulling things out of our rear ends right now. We're like, what do you, I think
I
it
saw
might
a video
like
one time.
Yeah, yeah. You know, no, we will have to actually research this a bit.
Yes.
And then we will have to come back on the clarification between a traditional inline and a bolt action, I guess, or
bolt action inline.
Inline. A
yeah.
bolt action inline.
So I think that's where the confusion is coming in. Hopefully, to kind of succinctly sum up what we were talking about, our muzzle loaders are, in fact, in line. They just are not a bolt action. They're a brake action system with a breech plug that the primer goes in. Loose powder, Sabot goes down the barrel. What John is familiar with and sounds like he's got a passion for are the percussion cap or flintlock, side lock type guns with a flash pan, a small amount of powder in there, then ignites the main charge in the barrel. That's as succinct as I can put it with my very limited knowledge of them. However, it is something Dave and I are going to be exploring further down the road because I really enjoy shooting those things.
Oh, it's so much fun.
Absolute ton of fun, and I'd like to hunt with them. Let's see, coming up on the show, now that we've actually addressed our listener feedback, we're going to go into the Chucker forecast, which, what did they say? I think the first paragraph, Dave, best survey or best season in 20 to 30 years?
That has been online from different organizations and saying that some of the forecasts look to be some of the best hunting this year in 20 years.
Right before we cracked open the microphones and started talking here, we were looking at Onyx and coming up with a plan for our opening day. We're going to be out chasing birds, and I think once we start diving a little deeper into this Chucker forecast, I mean, it basically mirrors everything you and I have seen over the past year or so being out in the field.
Oh, yeah, especially the last few times we've been out chasing some critters, just the
amount of birds.
Just the amount of birds yeah. in general. And just when you're sitting on the hill and you're glassing as sun's coming up, the entire bowl is just chatterboxing.
Yes.
You know, you kind of forget that you're big game hunting because you're looking for the coveys.
Where's that coming from? You and I can always offer anecdotal, like, hey, we were out in this area, saw a ton of birds, more birds than we've usually seen in these areas. But it's nice to have a little bit of reinforcement with an actual scientific survey. So when Dave and I have been saying, hey, this is going to be a phenomenal chucker season, it's nice to open my email on Friday after work, get the forecast and go, I knew it. We're on to something.
Right.
So we've got that coming up. And the Shooting Performance Institute long range course, that's October 19th and 20th. Jim Irwin, who's been a repeat guest on the show, is going to be teaching that. It's not just for those of you that have the $12,000 long range rigs. It is a bring your hunting rifle and see how it performs out to distance, get a lot of data on the gun, and hopefully that makes you a better hunter, regardless of whether or not you ever take a 700 plus yard shot. So again, shootingperformanceinstitute.com, October 19th and 20th. We will be right back on Nevada Backcountry. Thanks for hanging in there over the break. You're listening to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. The show is Nevada Backcountry. If you miss a segment or you miss an entire episode because you were out hunting with your kids, killing chucker, go to the website, 991fmtalk.com. Click on the podcast tab. All the past episodes are available there. We're also available on Apple Podcasts for those of you that have an Apple iPhone. Now, let me take a pause real quick. We're going to launch into the chucker forecast, Dave. However, Dave smartly pulled up his phone over the break.
Driving me nuts. I had to do it. Driving me bonkers, man.
I saw you clicking away over there while I was wrapping up before we went to break, and I thought, well, what in the heck is he doing on his phone?
Yeah.
Dave looked it up. So, John, if you are still listening and you didn't say these guys are idiots and turn off the radio, a bolt-action inline muzzleloader, the only part that's loaded through the bolt opening is the primer.
Yeah, that's what it says, is the primer. And certain ones, you can use varying types of primers. You can use the 209, you can use the percussion caps.
Whatever you want.
Yeah, whatever you like.
Okay.
But yeah. So it's kind of like with ours, with our, you know, the break action, we break it open, put the primer in, close it,
yep.
And then we take the, you know, the hammer, the and pull it back, and that's ready to rock and roll.
Right.
Where this is, it's the bolt. As you pull the bolt back, it gets it the pin ready to
okay, so,
do its business, and then yeah. you know, put the bolt in, lock the bolt, you have it on safety, obviously, and when you're ready to fire, you take it off safety and pull the trigger, and so you still load everything from the muzzle.
And in that video, they were using loose powder. So
yes,
correction to my statement last segment.
Yeah.
You can use loose powder. And the loose powder,
and
the bullet.
The sabot.
Yep, yeah. All that goes down the muzzle.
Yeah.
You just load the primer in the bolt action port or
correct.
Opening.
Okay. Yeah.
Hopefully that doesn't muddy the waters any further.
Yeah.
I think we finally got a definitive answer on that.
So cool. All right.
On to what you and I have been really excited about, texting back and forth about, coming up with plans for the chucker season 24-25. Dave, why don't you hit us with some facts as far as this chucker forecast?
Yeah, so it just got released, and it is looking quite impressive for the year. Now, the numbers themselves are kind of, you got to read into it a bit.
Okay.
The chicks per adult are actually down from 2023 surveys, because this is the 24 survey. The 2024 survey is 4.8 chicks per adult, where in 2023 it was 6 chicks per adult. So people are like, how can it be better if it's down? The kicker is that through the surveys and through the observations of the birds, that there is a much larger carryover from last year's birds.
Gotcha.
The young of the year from last year carried over. So with those non-productive birds in the coveys, it'll basically indicate a lower chick per adult number, because you have a lot more birds that carried over that aren't breeding.
That doesn't necessarily align with what I've seen, because I've seen more chicks in this last year than I think I ever have.
Well, that's good though, because that would represent, if they're saying there's this significant increase in carryover,
okay,
and you're seeing a ton of chicks.
Yeah. Like on your antelope hunt.
Oh yeah, that was nuts. That's just telling you that the carryover is even bigger.
Ah, okay.
They're saying that there's so many birds out there.
See, I thought they would see more chicks per bird just because, anecdotally, I've seen so many chicks this year.
Yeah.
And like, holy smokes, what, end of August?
Yeah.
We had little tiny brown cotton ball chucker chicks running around.
Yeah. like third hatches.
I've never seen that.
No, yeah. No, not at all. So no, so it just looks like, well, you just got to read into it a little more with the carryover. So
okay.
There were like 59 areas that were surveyed throughout the western and eastern part of the state, which is pretty much if you ran a line, you know, below Reno, like Carson City area, all the way across the state below Ely, that would be your western and eastern regions of the state. And then obviously everything down below, that's like the southern region.
I want to get into the southern region because I know there's a bunch of effort that's been put in down there.
Yes.
But we can save that for later. Let's just keep rolling on the overall numbers right now.
Yes. Yeah, so overall, based on the population of Chucker, the production was incredibly promising for this 24-25 season. Pretty much all areas that were surveyed are above average.
Yeah, there were two that were, what, just kind of flat, Pershing County West and Pershing County East.
Yeah, Pershing County in general, that's one of those locations where trying to get more birds into that area.
You know, okay.
Traditionally, those numbers were very low.
Okay.
That whole southern part of the state, really low numbers, and those have actually been coming up, you know, over the last few years and populations being established and stuff, so...
Can I ask a quick sidebar question? This makes me a crazy person. When these come out, they use this verbiage. Pershing County East. High numbers of wild horses are still having a negative impact on habitat conditions in southeastern Pershing County. Okay, this is from the Wildlife Department.
Right.
There's no such thing as wild horses in Nevada.
Oh, you're wanting it to be feral horses.
Feral horses, right? Yeah. Scientifically, like they got all this science.
Yeah.
And then they use the phrase wild horses. And I'll tell you why this is an open sore for me right now. I made a comment. Somebody took a bunch of pictures and I want to say it was on one of those social media sites. And I made the comment, imagine walking down the street in Brooklyn, taking pictures of pigeons and then gleefully posting them online as pictures of the wild, wild birds. You would be laughed out of town. And I made that comment. Yeah. I got run out of town on a rail. People were so angry about that comment. And so I'm like, I'm getting to that point, Dave, where it's old man yells at clouds. Where I'm like, I'm not even going to speak up anymore. Because when I got the state agency using the phrase wild horses, it's like, I'm on a sinking ship, man. I got to just, I'm done bailing. I got to find a rowboat and get the hell out of here.
I'm out of here.
I'm done. Anyway, there's my sidebar.
There's your sidebar.
So let's get back to the Chucker forecast.
Yeah. So across the board, every area is looking awesome. I mean, Churchill County is got surprising numbers. There's a lot of locations there. Elko County is through the roof.
Yes.
Just as well as Eureka County and Humboldt County. The Hungarian partridge in Humboldt County is, the numbers are significantly up from 2023. Yeah. And we've noticed that ourselves going in the field. I don't think I've seen this many Huns.
Yep.
Cruising around in years. I mean, I don't even know when was the last time I saw this many Huns.
Yeah.
It's just been awesome.
I saw them somewhere I'd never seen them before, up in 062.
Oh,
I'm sure they've been in there.
Oh, yeah.
But I've never seen them in there. And we kicked up a bunch of coveys of Huns in there. So figure.
The only place where there were no birds recorded, which is Lincoln County. That's just common sense. But, you know, the southern region, a lot of the protocol being used which is survey protocol for surveys for Chucker and Partridge is from Utah. So, and they're using a camera station protocol.
Oh, okay.
So you're putting up trail cameras at drinkers.
Gotcha.
Could be guzzlers, could be a spring, known areas where the Chucker frequent during the season.
Okay.
And then those images are used to determine and help out with surveys. Because when you're out in the field for a day or two or three surveying for particular animals, it gives you a one dot on a data.
Right.
This is one dot during this entire year. Where the camera stations provide you longer trend data. It's showing you over time the use of a particular area.
What's the old, like, once is a sighting, twice is a pattern, and three times is a trend or something?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So, and it's definitely shown a really nice increase in bird production and use in the southern part of the state. So Lincoln County is the only one that had no bird, but Nye County and Pershing and stuff are looking really good. In the forecast itself, it even gives you some places to actually go.
Hey, I hear the music. I don't want to cut you off there, but we have to take a break. Thank you to Battleborn Tree Service, for hunters, by hunters. Mike is an absolute great guy. If you have tree care needs at your property, get in touch with Battleborn Tree Service. We're going to dive a little deeper into the trucker forecast when we come back on Nevada Backcountry. The show is Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk with David Catalano and me, Henry Evans. Before we went to break there, you just started to get into some of the survey protocol. I wanted to back up real quick and go over that, Dave, because years ago, they used to survey this stuff with a helicopter, correct?
Correct.
And
correct.
What, there was that big crash. Is that what changed some of this?
Yeah, I mean, that was some of it. And thankfully, there were no fatalities during that
accident.
The helicopter that went down. Folks were definitely hurt, but definitely opened the eyes. Because prior to that, again, knock on wood, Nevada hadn't had any helicopter crashes in their history of doing wildlife surveys, where pretty much a lot of the western states around us had all had crashes and fatalities. And so that opened the eyes up, like, what are some other ways that we can effectively acquire the data we need to let sportsmen and women know what's going on, and especially for the department's needs for the health and the forecast and the management of the species. So
how would they do the helicopter thing, real? Because what would they just fly low and fly circles
would fly low. It's similar to the waterfowl surveys, which is done in a fixed wing airplane,
right?
Where you fly over, you know, with waterfowl, they're usually rafted up or they're a congested location, and you can fly over them and you learn how to, like, block count.
You'll
see a group and you can go, okay, block it out. And like, okay, blocks of 20, you get 20, 40, 60, 80, 100, 120, 140. And if there's really big groups, you learn how to block it out in groups of 100 birds.
Gotcha.
And these are all, like, very rough estimates, because counting a bird from an elevated position that's moving, you're not going to get every bird. So you block it. They would fly low, coveys would flush, and they would be able to guesstimate the covey.
The protocol they're using now with the game cam seems like a much more accurate way.
Definitely has its benefits.
Okay.
There's been talk of using, you know, drones, because there's a lot of wildlife.
Oh, that makes sense.
There's a lot of wildlife surveys being conducted now throughout the western states that are taking advantage of drones. And there are a lot of drone companies that offer it, because you can take a drone and you don't have to have somebody on the ground with the goggles on and a joystick and running the drone. You can actually get on a mapping system and map out, pre-program its route, and it takes care of business for you. So those are other things that are kind of in the works.
But
camera stations and then being on foot.
Just covering ground on foot.
Just covering ground, going to areas that, you know, are well known for chucker, and then expanding from that to see, you know, if there's more in areas that may not be so prone.
Okay.
See if things have moved in there, things like that. The numbers that are being acquired, you know, the 59 areas for this past year, and then, you know, the 28 camera locations have provided some really good numbers. And, you know, I know I'm not giving any, like, the forecast itself is thumbs up across the board.
Yes,
And the dialogue is pretty much standard across all of the counties, obviously except for Lincoln County, where hunting this year is going to be significantly better than previous years.
So it's a good season to get into trucker hunting.
It is. It's a really good season to get out there and get into some birds.
over the break, you said something about they actually have a couple areas for folks to check out, and hopefully they're not spotlighting anywhere I like to go, but
right.
Yeah. It's like,
yeah, they're, you know, they're not giving you GPS coordinates or Onyx, or they're not sharing Onyx or anything like that. But for the Hungarian partridge, the numbers are just significantly up, like we were stating, from the 2023 survey, as well as you know, the things that we've seen. The total of 50 adults and 227 chicks that were classified, it's like a 5.5 chicks per adult. That is big. That's a great, great number. The areas that they're highlighting, like, hey, to get out and check out some Hans and have your opportunity, are like the areas east of the Santa Rosa Mountains, the Santa Rosa Range, the Independence and the Tuscarora Range.
Yep.
And then any public lands that are kind of along the ridges, the flanks of the Ruby Mountains. So not really giving you pinpoint locations, because you and I have both been in all of these areas. It's big.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I knew that there were Huns in the Independence, but on my dad's cow elk hunt, which is that northern end where the bull runs come into the Independence, we saw piles of Huns. So they're, yeah, that makes sense. That's a good one. I'll throw that out there. Hey, if you want to kill some Huns, it's a drive, but up there, that southern end of 062.
It's fantastic. Yeah. And then, you know, there's a caveat here that the Department of Wildlife kind of throws out there. It says, don't be surprised if you encounter Huns while hunting the northwestern counties. The occurrences for Huns in those particular areas are on the rise. They're becoming more frequent. So that's really good, too, because it's telling you that these birds are expanding. These birds are pushing their ranges and getting into more habitat that's suitable for their lifestyle. So that is key.
Okay.
This is showing growth. This is showing that the management practices that have been in place are working. I sound like I'm campaigning, you know. This administration is for the people. So it's showing that a lot of the management practices that are being implemented with the help of other states that are Utah, Idaho, that are also have large upland game bird programs, and collaborating with them, getting ahead of the curve with what works and what doesn't, putting all that stuff to practice. What you see on the ground is telling us it's working.
Yeah.
The birds are expanding. The populations are getting bigger, providing a lot more opportunity to, if you're a birder, to go out there and check them out, you know, just follow a birder and let them take pictures and then shoot them behind them.
Yeah. I don't, you know, in all my years, and I like birding, I like with my kids, you know, I enjoy doing it, but I've never come across someone birding in the areas I go chucker hunting. I think the terrain keeps most of them out.
Oh, yes.
But I was going to bring up, if there are any recent transplants listening to the show, or if somebody in Idaho, Washington, Oregon is listening to the podcast, the cool thing about Huns in Nevada that I have seen, unlike states like Montana, Idaho, that area around Spokane, ton of Huns up there, these are not what you are used to as far as ag field birds. So especially in that eastern portion of Washington, portions of Oregon, you can find chucker in the high desert up on peaks. Huns are usually down in the ag fields. That's where you would get into Huns. Montana, same thing. Nevada, it's cool because they might be slightly lower on the mountain than the chucker, but they're in the same country chucker. These are not your ag field lowland Huns.
No, yeah, it's not like hunting pheasant or something.
No,
you know?
No.
Because, you know, like on my antelope hunt, we had Huns going all the way up that steep canyon.
Yep.
They were flushing left and right going up that canyon. And then we even had a small group way up top with the chucker.
Yeah.
So, you know, traditionally,
if you've hunted Huns outside of Nevada, you know, you're probably used to the ag field birds. These are not
the Santa Rosas. You get on the flanks of the Santa Rosas there, and those more of a rolling hill sections before you start getting into the steep, nasty stuff. You get in that low kind of grassy area or vegetation, and there's plenty of Huns in that stuff.
Yeah.
They just love that location.
Rolling hill type.
Yeah, that little rolling hill area. So this forecast just really got me excited.
Me too, yeah.
I'm not going to show it to my dog. I'm not showing it to Gage because he's already ripping up the backyard pretty darn good. And I have a feeling if I showed him the forecast or stuck it in his sleeping area that he'd probably...
He'd lose it? Yeah,
yeah,
I could see that.
Know, I'd have to give him some Ritalin or something.
I'm going
to
hose you on that because when I go over there to watch him while you're doing the wedding stuff, I'm going to leave a copy of it for him.
Dude.
So you're going to get back to a destroyed house.
Yeah, a destroyed house, a dog that's completely jonesing on me. I'm like, dude, who gave the dog crack?
I can't wait to get out. And, you know, I didn't have a big game tag this season. I do have that moose hunt coming up, and we'll get into that on the final segment here. But for me, it's like, hey, this is great. I got to help you with your antelope, my dad with his elk. I got the moose thing, which is kind of a special treat. But I'm looking forward to getting back to a good old-fashioned chucker season.
Oh, yeah.
Where I didn't have a big game tag and chucker was all I had.
Yeah. And I'm kind of curious, whoever's listening out there who are upland game bird hunters like Henry and myself, what kind of bird dog are you using? I'm really curious. Like, I know a lot of folks use GSPs and wire hairs. I mean,
yep.
Myself, I have an English setter. You have a Brittany.
Yep.
I've got a friend who uses standard poodles. He has two standard poodles.
I've come across that before.
And I'll tell you, I've hunted behind them. They're pretty freaking amazing. And then an Irish setter, which I guess that would work too.
Yeah.
The only Irish setter I've ever known was my neighbor's when I was a kid, and his name was Rusty. And it was literally probably the stupidest dog I've ever met in my life. That thing would run into the garage door. I thought, God.
I hunted a pointing lab
for years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are becoming popular. But I'm curious. You know, my dog Gage is getting older. He's going to be, this is his eighth year of hunting. He's still
starting
got plenty
to put
of
some feelers out.
Yeah, well, you know, I love my English setter. He is insanely high strung, which is super cool for a bird dog.
So is my Brittany.
So is your Brittany. You know, as I get older, I'm not as high strung.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'm kind of looking at the, you know, what other dogs are being used.
We got to take a break. We will be right back on Nevada Backcountry. And when we come back, we will get into my upcoming moose hunt and we'll kind of conclude on the bird dog discussion. And thank you to Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight, for sponsoring Nevada Backcountry. Final segment of the show. Thank you to Truck Envy here in Reno for sponsoring the show. Again, I want to remind people, shootingperformanceinstitute.com. Jim Irwin's long range course is going to be coming up October 19th and 20th. And like I said, hey, if all you got is a Winchester Model 70 and 270, bring it. Learn its capabilities. It's going to be a heck of a fun time. I'll be out there for it. So if you're a listener, you sign up for the course through the website, make sure you introduce yourself to me. I'll be the guy flailing away, missing stuff out there, but I'm going to have a good time regardless.
Yes.
I kept talking about this upcoming moose hunt I have, and I wanted to get to a listener question. However, over the break, Dave and I got talking. Let's just keep this show about birds. Let's finish on chucker, finish on bird dogs, bird dog accessories, because otherwise I don't think we got enough time to get into my upcoming moose hunt.
Yeah, that moose hunt's going to be fantastic, but yeah.
It is, yeah, and we'll go over the question about, you know, hey, what in the heck are you bringing for a multi-species, everything from moose to wolf.
Your tag is moose, deer, wolf
and mule deer.
And
yeah,
those are the three.
Yep.
Yeah.
Obviously, moose being the priority.
For sure. Yeah. Oh, heck yeah.
But if I happen to, I wouldn't mind like a nice cape to wear around, like wolf pelt with the skull. And
you know, my imagination's going, that's not a good
not
thing.
A good look.
Yeah. No.
All right. So, hey, over the break, Dave, we started going down a rabbit hole and decided moose hunt, we'll save that for a different show. Let's talk about bird dogs.
This came up because my dog Gage, English setter, is 8 years old, still a phenomenal hunter, the best hunting dog I have ever had to date. Thank you to Skeeter Setters in Susanville.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, he pretty much just does English setters.
Okay.
And you know, he does dabble in other breeds as well, but his meat and potatoes are setters. Before this was my dog, Superstar Power Ranger.
Get
never,
out of here.
Swear to God, man, never let your six-year-old son name your dog.
Oh, no.
So, but we just called her Star, but her legal name was Superstar Power Ranger.
That's how I wound up with an owl named Trevor.
Yes,
at my house.
And
yeah.
Which Trevor is doing fantastic, was released and
good.
Living the wildlife. But she was a black lab, and it was just purely waterfowl. Amazing dog. So my question to everyone out there is, what dog are you hunting with? I know it's like a...
And why is the
and
big
why?
Question.
Why did you pick that breed? Henry was stating off air was it's a Ford and Chevy thing. I mean, you've got your diehard GSPers, you've got your diehard wire hairs, you got your diehard Britneys.
Yep.
And you'll never use anything other than. I'd like to know why. What's the case? So I've owned two GSPs. And I don't think I'll ever go back to a GSP. And my reason being...
Yeah, I was going to say why.
My reason being is because of how inbred they are.
That was not the answer I expected. That was not... Okay.
Trust me, Gage is just as wiry as both of those GSPs I had.
Yeah.
But the issue was both of them, by the time they were three, they had so many medical issues... That neither one could hunt, and they were both dead by four and a half years old.
No kidding.
Both of them. So,
okay.
And even my vet was like, these things are pretty inbred. The breeders aren't really controlled.
Gotcha.
It's like the 70s when it comes to breeding GSPs. And then with wire hairs, I've always been interested in those. But, you know, I'm looking for another dog. Possibly for next season. And
because 8 to 10 is where there's a noticeable decline in stamina in the hills and performance overall. Yeah.
Right. I want to catch that gap, let Gage still hunt with the new dog and then retire Gage when he hits, you know, like his 10 mark or something.
I did that with my dogs. I had a pointing lab. And then we were on a waiting list for a long time for Dixie. And then life happens, you kind of forget. And it's like one day we got a call. It was terrible timing. John, my son John, was born. And then we picked up Dixie like, I think a week later.
Oh, geez.
As a puppy. So we had a newborn and a puppy. But we'd been on the list for like 3 or 4 years for this dog. And it just so happened, hey, we got a litter. You know, you guys are, your name's on the list. Now you can pick one. And we went, man, we waited so long. And I will give credit to my wife. Cynthia was the one.
You better.
I was the one that was like, I'm not dealing with a bird dog and a baby at the same time. Not going to happen. Moose, my pointing lab. Moose is doing great. We've had a bunch of great seasons. We can go another year. Whatever. Let's wait. Cynthia was the one that was like, no, we waited this long. Let's go ahead. We might as well get it over with like a Band-Aid. Just rip it off, like
she's
puppy and a baby.
She's a woman of steel. I'll tell you that.
Something
no
else.
Doubt about that.
But I had a couple seasons of overlap there, and it was kind of nice. I couldn't hunt them together because she is 100% a pointer, and even though he was a quote-unquote pointing lab, he didn't point worth a crap. I had him trained as a flusher because his pointing instincts just weren't strong enough.
Yeah.
So I would hunt him first. And then kind of figure out where because a flusher will cover a ton of ground.
Oh, yeah.
And just get everything up in a bowl. So I would kind of know where the coveys had flushed to. I'd scratch out a few birds with him. I'd load him back up in the truck. I'd get Dixie. And then that's where we would start working, picking apart those because she will hold. And she'll do the like little half step and walk them into like a little valley. You know, she'll get them backed up against rocks.
Yeah.
And then just let me, they'll flush at 15 yards. And then even I can hit them at that distance.
That's impressive.
So it was a cool.
You hitting them.
I knew what you were. Yeah. People can't see Dave's facial expressions. I got the joke.
I got the joke. Well, and that's my big worry is that Gage, he is a phenomenal all around dog. He points, he holds. As soon as a covey flushes, his head is up in the air watching those birds. And as soon as he sees me shoot and something drop,
then he goes.
He's after the bird. And he retrieves and he brings it right back to me. He drops it on my side. And then he will move forward and sit. And like he's like, okay, where are we
going
now?
That's awesome. Yeah.
So I'm in that point like, should I just get another English? Because this dog is Superman.
Will he, have you hunted him with other pointers?
Yes. So
will he honor?
Yes. So when we go out, there's a group of us that go out to Green Gulch every year.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah.
We tune the dogs.
Right, right.
So there have been times where we've had 5, 6 dogs out there. And once the first dog's on point, it's the coolest thing to watch is the other four, you know, the 3, 4, or 5 will train right behind.
Yep.
Whatever dog's lead point, that is the coolest. I've gotten
that's
it on video.
That's honoring the point.
They yeah, call exactly. That, yeah. Honoring the point. It's the coolest thing to watch.
My unsolicited 2 cents on that, I would just get another pointer and maybe another setter, Dave, because then you could hunt them. That was a big one. Moose, my lab died. I always enjoyed, I mean, shot a lot of birds, hunting them the way I was hunting the two of them.
Right.
But it always kind of sucked that Moose and Dixie never actually hunted together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. If you got a system, it's working for you.
Yeah.
I would just get another one of those dogs and let Gage's last 3-4 years in the field be hunting with a dog that hunts the same way. That's my unsolicited advice.
Yeah. Now I just got to convince Gino of that.
Oh, yeah. That's
you may
a
have
tough
to help
one.
Me on that one.
I got you.
Well, you know what? I'm going to get Cynthia.
Oh, yeah.
She's good. Definitely do it for me.
So, let Cynthia work
so
on
everyone
her.
Out there, you know, we'd love to hear about the dog that you have, the breed, why, and some of the high points of why you have that dog and how well it.
You're like me. So, right, you have to accept that I'm not, I finally started drawing big game tags.
No.
I'm a weekend warrior. I got 4 kids now. I got work obligations. I got this show. The fact of the matter is it's got to be a good house pet first.
Yeah.
Period.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
So anyway, hey, chime in. You can shoot us a text. The number is 775-884-9910 or send us an email through the website. And I promise you, it might take a couple episodes, but we will get to it eventually. Hey, sincere thank you to everyone for taking time out of your Sunday to tune in to Nevada Backcountry. Tom Gresham's Gun Talk is coming up next on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.